ILFC says it needs funding to last past April. North Korea moves its missile to the launch pad. And is the Czech Republic still on board with missile defense? This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Thursday, March 27, 2009. A year ago, International Lease Finance Corporation was one of the few bright spots in the portfolio of AIG. Now, the airline lessor has seen its credit rating pulled to the dirt along with its parent company and could be in trouble. The Wall Street Journal reports ILFC needs immediate access to new funding to shore up its short-term reserves, and unsecured credit is proving hard to come by. An infusion of $1.7 billion from AIG only keeps the company running through the end of April. ILFC says it will collateralize any new financing with its fleet of 955 aircraft, but even that doesn't guarantee lenders will step up. In its annual report filed with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, the company says, quote, without additional support from AIG or obtaining secured financing from a third-party lender, in the future there could exist doubt concerning our ability to continue as a going concern, unquote. The journal suggests the company's survival appears to hinge on whether the Federal Reserve Bank of New York will step in with a loan. Among bailout candidates, ILFC is actually a sound bet, with assets exceeding its debts and over $700 million in net income for 2008. The electronic eyes of U.S. spy satellites are trained on a launch pad in North Korea as the communist regime defies U.N. resolutions by positioning a long-range Taipodong 2 missile on a launch pad on the nation's east coast. North Korea says it's a launch vehicle for a space satellite. Western diplomats say whatever it is, its launch will risk sanctions. Reuters reports that in Washington today, three of the six nations engaged in long-term talks on North Korea will meet. The U.S. will be represented by Sun Kim, its new negotiator on the panel. Japan's Akitaka Saiki will be there, as will Sung Lak of South Korea. U.S. State Department spokesman Gordon DeGuid offered no agenda details, but commented, quote, a launch of any type of vehicle we would consider to be in violation of the UN Security Council resolutions. This provocative type of action would not go unnoticed, unquote. North Korea said yesterday that if the international community imposes sanctions, it will restart a nuclear plant which makes weapons-grade plutonium. An inability to verify that plant was ever shut down in the first place has much to do with the current tense atmosphere. China and Russia have chosen not to send envoys to today's meeting in Washington, but are urging caution. China encourages all parties to, quote, remain restrained and calm, unquote. While the government of Poland lobbies the Obama administration to stay the course with a missile defense system for Eastern Europe, opponents of the plan are hailing a political victory in the Czech Republic. The Associated Press reports that Czech Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek, an advocate of the U.S.-supplied missile shield, was embarrassed Tuesday by a 101-96 no-confidence vote in Parliament, which led to his resignation yesterday. The embarrassment was deepened by the timing, 2 weeks before a state visit by U.S. President Barack Obama, and in the midst of the Republic's hosting of the rotating EU presidency. Jan Tamás, who has organized protests against the missile shield, was celebrating, quote, it's a big victory for democracy in our country. We're glad that a government which ignored the will of a majority of people has fallen, unquote. But any celebration may be premature. It wasn't the missile defense issue, but rather the government's handling of the economy, which drew the no-confidence vote. And Topolánek may not ever actually leave office. He'll remain on the job as a lame duck while his opposition tries to form a new government. If three such attempts fail, an election will be held, and Topolánek is expected to be a candidate. For now, Topolánek is assuring other EU governments that the change will have no effect on the EU presidency. If undying optimism is a weapon against recession, Boeing is a big gun. Last year, when it became clear we were in a recession, Airbus said 27% of its backlog might be at risk. Boeing countered with a projection of 5 to 10%. Even in a 2009, which has so far seen more cancellations than new orders, Boeing VP of Marketing Randy Tinseth tells USA Today, the company's backlog of almost 3,700 aircraft is enough to keep its production lines busy for at least 7 years. But analysts have their eyebrows raised. Sharp-tongued Richard Abulafia of the Thiel Group says only a fool would believe those orders will hold. He agrees with Boeing and Airbus that customers taking delivery of new planes this year will find financing, but, quote, after that, all bets are off. In a serious downturn, and this certainly is one, production typically falls by about a third. I can't see why in this downturn it would be different, unquote. Other analysts have also lowered their rating on Boeing's stock and noted the likely impact of the collapsing freight market on Boeing's new 777 freighter. The International Air Transport Association predicts the 200 airlines it tracks worldwide will take delivery of only half the planes that Boeing and Airbus expected to deliver in 2009. Up next on ANN, Arizona airports get federal stimulus funds. A lineman fills a Cessna 421 with Jet A by mistake. And a pilot who chose prayer over his emergency checklist gets 10 years in prison. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for March 27th. I'm Paul Platt. U.S. Secretary of Transportation Ray LaHood yesterday announced more than $28 million in grants for Arizona airports under the recently enacted American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. One is a $10.5 million grant for runway rehabilitation at busy Phoenix Sky Harbor International Airport. LaHood made the most of the political opportunity. Quote, this administration is committed to getting the U.S. economy going again, and these grants are part of making that happen. We are creating jobs here in Arizona while investing in the long-term safety and economic vitality of our airports, unquote. The grant for Sky Harbor will pay for improvements to Northside Taxiway C, including an upgrade from asphalt to concrete. Tucson International will get $1.85 million for installing new security equipment. Sierra Vista Municipal in Parker gets $6 million to rehabilitate runway 1230. Kingman Airport gets $5 million to rehabilitate aircraft parking aprons. Taylor Municipal gets $3.5 million to rehabilitate a runway. Avisukia gets to spend $1.8 million to rehabilitate two taxiways. The Recovery Act makes available $1.1 billion for qualified airports on a discretionary basis, so Secretary LaHood has lots more upcoming photo ops. Based on a factual report from the National Transportation Safety Bureau, a lineman's confusion appears to have been behind January's emergency landing of a Cessna 421C Golden Eagle in Wichita, Kansas. The board says the piston twin departed AAO, that's Wichita's Colonel James Jabara Airport, just after 8 a.m. local time January 30th, bound for Millard Airport west of Omaha, Nebraska. Quote, while climbing to 3,000 feet mean sea level, the airplane's engines began to lose power. While attempting to troubleshoot the malfunction, the pilot assessed that he could not return to the airport and elected to perform a forced landing, unquote. The aircraft landed gear up in a field. The pilot and his two passengers suffered minor injuries. When investigators arrived, quote, an examination of the airplane revealed that the fuel tanks contained what appeared to be a mixture of 100 low-lead and Jet A fuel, unquote. A lineman at AAO admitted he topped off the Cessna 421 with 80 gallons of Jet A, not 100 low-lead. He went on to explain that two Piper PA-46 turboprop conversions based at the airport retained the narrower fuel inlets designed to prevent fueling with wider, flatter Jet A nozzles developed to prevent misfueling. So line workers used adapters or simply used a slower dispensing setting to eliminate the need for a proper nozzle fit. So when he went to refuel the Cessna 421, which bears a passing resemblance to a 425 Conquest 1 turboprop, he didn't think anything of it. What odds would you give now on the FAA requiring future turbine conversion STCs to require replacing the filler neck? When Tuninter Flight 1153 Captain Shefik Garbi and his co-pilot, Ali Kuber Lusoud, lost the left engine on their ATR-72 turboprop on August 6, 2005, they were at flight level 230 off the coast of Sicily. They set up for landing at Palermo, Italy, when the right engine also failed at 7,000 feet, ditching in the Mediterranean became their only option. Investigators say cockpit voice recordings reveal that Garby panicked, handed control of the plane off to Lassude, and began to pray instead of performing the ditching checklist. The plane went down 12 miles off the coast, and there were 16 fatalities. The Associated Press reports Garby and Lassude were both sentenced this week to 10 years in prison for manslaughter for their lapse. Five executives of Tuninter, which is a Tunis Air charter subsidiary now known as Sevenair, received lesser sentences. Investigators discovered that the day before the crash, maintenance personnel had substituted a fuel gauge from an ATR 42 into the 72, which produced a false reading which left the pilots unaware they were taking off low on fuel. Garby's defense lawyer, Francesca Coppi, intends to appeal. She says Garby, quote, is convinced that he did all he could to save as many lives as possible. Faced with danger, he evoked his God just like any one of us would do, unquote. SAFE, the Society of Aviation and Flight Educators, is now accepting regular and charter memberships. Additional membership levels will be offered in the near future. As we've reported in detail, SAFE was formed by a group of CFIs unhappy with the direction and governance structure of the National Association of Flight Instructors. Founders promise a more progressive, inclusive, member-centric organization and are working to formalize a new credentialing program for flight instructors, comparable to the Master Instructor credential offered through NAFI. Regular members of SAFE will pay dues of $45 per year and will get voting rights, a member business link on the SAFE website, members-only access to key resources and materials on the SAFE website, access to the Master Instructor Accreditation Program, and other benefits currently under development. Charter members receive all that, plus a certificate of appreciation and SAFE apparel. Four tiers of charter membership are available: bronze at $100, silver at $250, gold at $500, and platinum at $1,000. In an email sent to members March 22nd, SAFE spokesman Doug Stewart confirmed that the organization's nonprofit status is still a few weeks off, and that dues paid before that approval might not be tax deductible. Those who've joined before they're assured of tax deductions are now voting through April 3rd for SAFE's first board of directors. The group has also honored the legacy of fallen mountain flyer Sparky Imussen by recognizing him as a member posthumously with membership number 001. Still ahead, the next crew is en route to the International Space Station. TCM announces rebates on its engines. And aerial combat comes to the Cola Wars. You're listening to Aero News.
Welcome to Cirrus Design, maker of the world's best-selling personal aircraft, the sleek SR-22. Cirrus planes feature the latest technologies and are equipped with an exclusive, life-saving parachute system. It is our mission to make personal aviation safe, affordable, and convenient. At Cirrus, we offer a test drive like no one else in the business.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Friday, March 27th, 2009. I'm Paul Plack. At 7:49 Eastern Time yesterday, a Soyuz TMA-14 departed the Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan, carrying Commander Gennady Padalka and Flight Engineer Michael Barrett of the 19th International Space Station crew to orbit for their six-month stay at the station. Also on board was billionaire space tourist Charles Simony, making his second trip to the station. Simony's stay will be short. He'll return to Earth on April 7th. Padalka is a colonel in the Russian Air Force and will command the Expedition 19 mission and also serve as Soyuz commander. He previously served as commander of Expedition 9 in 2004. Barrett will serve as a flight engineer for Expedition 19. He served as lead crew surgeon for the first expedition crew to the station from July 1998 until he was selected as an astronaut candidate. This will be his first spaceflight. The third member of the Expedition 19 crew is Japan Aerospace Exploration Agency astronaut Koichi Wakata, who arrived at the station on the shuttle Discovery March 15th. He's serving as a flight engineer for Expeditions 18, 19, and 20. Back at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida, the shuttle Atlantis is scheduled to roll out to Launch Pad 39A this Tuesday, with liftoff for its STS-125 mission currently scheduled for May 12th. The crew's extremely complex mission is a service call to NASA's Hubble Space Telescope, the last one planned before the shuttle fleet retires next year. They'll seek to repair the orbiting lab's primary data transfer system, which failed last September 27th. The shuttle Discovery, meanwhile, is on the way back. Windows for landing are tomorrow afternoon at 1:43 p.m. and 3:19 p.m. Eastern Time at Kennedy. If you're visiting Disney World tomorrow, you'll hear two sonic booms in rapid succession. It's always fun to watch all the foreign tourists look up. Teledyne Continental Motors reduced prices on its engines in January by as much as 10% on some models. Now, TCM has followed up with a rebate on all genuine Continental new and rebuilt power plants. Those rebates are $1,000 or $2,000 for gear-driven engines, and they're on now through April 15th. TCM stresses some aircraft owners may be confused by what overhaulers refer to as a zero-time-since-overhaul versus the term zero-time engines. Only original equipment manufacturers can provide new and factory-rebuild engines that are absolute zero-time engines. The benefits include a zero-time engine logbook, full compliance with all ADs and service bulletins, quick turnaround time, and higher residual value. And finally, this is like deja vu from a taste test commercial in the 1970s. Having made progress toward resolving most of the major issues in its absorption of Northwest Airlines, one of the sticky problems remaining for Delta Airlines is, believe it or not, Coke or Pepsi. Northwest Airlines has a standing contract with Pepsi. Delta not only has Coca-Cola products exclusively, but Coke is also an Atlanta institution like Delta. For now, Delta flights will continue to serve Coke and Northwest flights will serve Pepsi, but one soft drink company will ultimately be chosen for both as the two carriers are integrated. Delta VP of Marketing Tim Mapes tells the Atlanta Journal-Constitution the contracts matter. Quote, "We're having conversations with both. There definitely will be financial considerations that we will be taking into account," unquote. Coke and Pepsi should note, last year, an issue in the merger was economic incentives given Northwest by the Minnesota Metropolitan Airports Commission. That deal required the company to forfeit $200 million if Northwest didn't keep its headquarters, a hub, and a minimum number of employees in the state through 2020. Well, Delta President Ed Bastian made it clear that the combined carrier would be headquartered in Atlanta, and that if the commission wasn't flexible in negotiating a settlement, Delta might just pay the bill and leave town. But on the Coke versus Pepsi issue, Bastian apparently is speaking less like a hardball negotiator and more like an Atlanta partisan. In an interview last year, he said, quote, "It'll be Coke. That's not a hard one," unquote. Worth noting, Coca-Cola board member Ron Allen is a former Delta CEO. But that doesn't necessarily mean much. Ed Bastian was once an executive at Pepsi. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, meet Sandy and Joanne Hill, the two former NAFI directors who played a central role in the controversy that resulted in the formation of SAFE. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Odeo, and at our website, aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and have a clear and unlimited day.